Today at about 3 p.m., there was an attempted break from our adjustment center, which is our maximum security facility. George Jackson was killed as he broke and ran outside the adjustment center.
Well, I could die tomorrow, but there'll be 200 or 300 people to take my place.
This is one black man they're not going to murder and sweep under the rug, unless they murder me, too.
This is for those who forgotten our name. Those names forgotten remain the same, though. Roam to and fro through the slums, overcome, we've overcame. So throughout this testimony, they shall remember our name. Graduated from whip and chain, psychologically drained and scarred. Prison bar, however, our breed remains. Tribulation burns and will be purged by fire. Oppressed long before leaving the suckling of our mother breast. Unlike public broadcast, for this is more than a simple test. This is a fight for survival, a fight that's more than a battle. This is war, so ask yourself, what do you stand for? The projects, the laws, the welfare, prison bars have scarred the people of color. There's no other whose turmoil has lasted such long. Though we have proven to be battle tested, our breed is original. Our breed is strong. Keep holding on, stand the course. For we have comrades in line to bear the torch. Remember to learn the rules before leaving the porch.
And we begin at 5 with breaking news involving a man convicted of murder as a teenager and sentenced to life in prison.
He's the first to get a second chance thanks to a decision by the state's highest court.
Ruled that it is cruel and unusual punishment to sentence a juvenile to mandatory life without parole.
In the meantime, everyone agrees there's certain to be continued overcrowding and more violence.
I know in Alabama, just like in a lot of states, three strikes and you're out, I think. And so our prison population has just dramatically increased over the last 20 years.
We asked men who had recently been released from prison about the conditions.
It's harder to keep clean when you got all the people in there like that.
Did you have that right about it?
Yes, sir. About every day, stabbing, biting, cutting.
Every day you saw things like that?
Yes, every day.
Next, Alabama's prison system at a breaking point. The state currently packs more than 24,000 inmates into a system designed to house about half that number.
But the truth is, if we've got thousands of people in jail who don't need to be there, and we haven't found the courage yet to get them out.
Our prisons are at double capacity. That is not a safe situation for the correction officers or the inmates.
If nigga just fired a warrant, nigga just fired a police, they were going on, man. Look at this shit.
We're not ex-convicts. We're not ex-offenders. We're not ex-felons. Don't classify us. We are people with felony convictions. People that have paid their debt to society. People.
They need to free a nigga about this beer, man.
All right, so that is the new Free Alabama Movement theme song, largely recorded by folks who are doing incarcerated organizing work in Holman. So now what's going on, what's developed in Holman this week in Alabama is a lot of repression, and the situation has escalated in a lot of ways. So here's a press release from the Free Alabama Movement. It says, a serious humanitarian crisis is developing at Holman Prison as correctional officers continue to walk off the job amid concerns about safety and apathy from Warren Terry Raybon and the office of the Alabama Department of Corrections Commissioner Jefferson S. Dunn, as violence, including deadly stabbings and assaults, continue to mount. Several officers expressed dismay and fear after learning that two of their fellow officers, I'll leave the names out, Warren Raybon, that they had knives drawn on them, had their lives threatened, etc. Several officers have also quit in the past 3 weeks after witnessing stabbing of fellow officers at the in the temple, and who had remained hospitalized with life-threatening injuries until he was pronounced dead. So what the Free Alabama Movement is asking for is, it says, we are further requesting assistance in finding a human rights attorney and a human rights and human rights observers to report to Holman immediately, as the level of violence is skyrocketing. The men at Holman are left in a virtual war zone to fend for themselves, while officers continue to walk off the job in what is already the most understaffed prison in America. Officers are so afraid to enter the dorms that routine security functions like conducting count are being left undone, or are being done by the incarcerated men themselves. Video footage attesting to this fact are widely available online.
Wow. Their whole scam is falling apart like a house of cards. We're going to have a musical break, and then we're going to be right back at you.
Walking along, some of them don't feel so strong.
Okay, brothers and sisters, we're about to start talking about a very strange situation we have in this country to give you a sense of what the head-fixing industry, that is what I call the media. Hold on a minute. Hold on to your pants here, because here we go. I'll be right with you. Okay, the biggest strike in world history just occurred. No thanks, we're focusing on the new iPhone, they tell you. So you go and they tell you about the iPhone. I don't want to use foul language, but it makes you want to use foul language. Trade unions in in India, representing some 180 million workers, staged a one-day strike. And there was virtually no coverage by mainstream American media. And when I say mainstream, I'm talking about the corporate media, CNN. Give me some corporate. Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5, Fox. So 180 million workers go on strike. And that is not newsworthy? So now, do you believe me when I call them the head-fixing industry? Check this out. When tens of millions of workers go out on strike in the second largest country in the world and the third largest economy in the world, that's India, resulting in what may be the biggest labor action in world history, right? You'd think that would merit some attention from the news. Well, not if you're an American newsmaker. No, sir. A coalition of trade unions in India, representing some 180 million workers, they staged this one-day strike, a general strike, on Friday, September the 2nd, in protest of what they called, and I gotta quote this, this is what they called it, an anti-worker and anti-people, unquote, policies of Prime Minister Narendra Modi, an advocate of neoliberal policies and increased foreign investment in India. I think they mentioned this strike on Democracy Now. I'll have to give them a little bit of credit. Now, India's, their Chamber of Commerce estimated that the economic impact of the strike was $2.4 billion. This is not newsworthy? No, bro. They are trying to program your ass. That's what. Now, this is not no conspiracy. Oh, the boogeyman coming to get you. Ain't none of that. This is real. And I got to thank Rinaldi again, because he's the one that made sure this got mentioned. And I don't know. This shows you the power also of the working class. When we sneeze, they lose money. You just heard Eric talking about when these guys started their strike, these guards have heard about this strike. These prisoners started going off on the guards. The guards is quitting. They walking away from the prisons. Oh, yeah. Because after all, stop and think about it. What do they have to gain by this? What do any of us have to gain by this mess called capitalist slavery? Okay, now we're going to move on. I mentioned that strike. And I'd like to give you more information, but you know what? You got it. And where did you hear it? Here on Slave Revolt Radio, our Radical Perspectives Collaborative with some good brothers from the Ghost Town. They don't want to talk about the Ghost Town. The Ghost Town is a secret, y'all. But that's that's all right. I love them anyway. I love them anyway. So now, Kaepernick is... This gentleman, Kaepernick, is I think you all know, he's a quarterback for the 49ers. And what's basically happening is that Mr. Kaepernick has refused to sing along and bow his head and show some so-called respect for the flag of the United States. When they were singing the Star-Spangled Banner, he refused to participate. Oh, man, they just went on and on and on. Oh, Kaepernick is a bad person. Kaepernick is not patriotic. Kaepernick is garbage. Kaepernick is this. Guess what? The number one selling jersey in America today is the San Francisco 49ers number 7. That is Kaepernick's jersey. So while, you know, you ain't going to hear old G-Mo going on and on about the sports stuff. I love the NBA. I love basketball. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. But generally, we don't talk about this very much. But because of Mumia's situation, we're looking for allies. And when this brother, this young man stood up, and then he took the knee, he started a whole insurgency inside of the NFL. They didn't know, but a lot of people share his feelings on the matter. And it winds up, other people started taking the knee. Other people on the San Francisco 49ers, other people on other teams. The WNBA, a whole team, refused to sing the national anthem. I'm sorry I'm not totally prepared today, but I want to say this to you. If you look up the Star Spangled Banner, what you will see, okay, what you will see is there's a verse in there that talks about killing insurgent slaves in the Star Spangled Banner. We sing it and don't even think about it. That's because we let somebody else control our minds. You got to control your own mind, baby. This is madness. So, one of the groups that I work with, which is called the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia, we're trying to reach Mr. Kaepernick. And thank him for doing the right thing and trying to get him to be an ally with us on the question of the freedom for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. I will read to you now an open letter to Colin Kaepernick about Mumia sent by the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia. Dear Colin, we salute your courageous action protesting police brutality throughout the U.S., we are heartened to see others, including entire teams and athletes in different sports, joining you, the soccer lady, all you know. Besides shooting black people to death in the streets every day and every night, American law enforcement is seeking the slow death in prison of dozens of heroes of the resistance of the 60s and 70s. We urge you to speak out on the case of Mumia Abdul-Jamal, a former Black Panther. Through his broadcasts and writings, he has fearlessly opposed police violence for 4 decades from prison, giving voice to the voiceless millions incarcerated in U.S. prisons. The price of Mumia's courage has been 35 years in prison, 32 of those years on death row. He was framed by the Philadelphia police for a murder he did not commit. They wanted him dead for reporting the violent police assaults on the Communal African American Move organization. These assaults culminated in a police helicopter aerial bombing, which burned down an entire Philadelphia city block. Nationally, because he refuses to be silenced even behind bars, the Fraternal Order of Police has relentlessly sought his death. His life is in immediate and constant and grave danger. While his official death sentence has finally been overturned because of constitutional violations, the Pennsylvania prison authorities refused to give him life-saving drugs for hepatitis C. The prison system is seeking to, quote, legally, unquote, lynch him through medical neglect. Although a federal judge ruled last month that the Pennsylvania protocol for hepatitis C, is unconstitutional, a protocol which endangers over 6,000 prisoners. Bowing to police pressure, the judge refused to issue an injunction ordering the prison authorities to give Mumia the medicines now. because of the cost of treatment set outrageously high by the big pharma. The protocol denies hepatitis C infected prisoners the key medicines until they are on the brink of irreversible liver damage and death. Nationally, there are about 700,000 Hep C sufferers in the U.S. prisons. Mumia is innocent and should be immediately set free. Recently, the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Williams versus Pennsylvania ruled that a defendant's constitutional right to a fair hearing before an impartial judge is violated when his appeals are heard by a judge who was previously a prosecutor involved in making important decisions in his case. The same Pennsylvania Supreme Court judge whose conduct was the subject of Williams versus Pennsylvania, Mr. Ronald Castile, heard Mumia's appeals of the denial of post-conviction relief and was assistant district attorney at the time of Mumia's trial and head district attorney at the time of his direct appeal. The ruling should mean that Mumia is set free, but because of his unceasing exposure of police violence and his overall critique of U.S. policy at home and abroad, time after time, for the past 30 years, the Pennsylvania and federal courts have made decisions that rulings which apply to literally everyone else do not apply to Mumia. To see that Mumia finally walks out of the prison doors, it will take public statements by you and people like you, backed by mass actions, including by unions and others who have long supported Mumia, and by the millions of young people who have taken up the cause that Black Lives Matter. Your action has helped bring the debate on police racism, brutality, and murder to a higher level by speaking out on Mumia's case. You can spark a movement to see that justice is finally done. My brothers and sisters, remember, sparks turn into flames. Free Mumia. Come on, Rinaldi, put it on me. Right now, Rinaldi. Hold on. Let me give you a thing.
Hey, everyone. Happy Sunday. A lot's happened this week in regards to Black Lives Matter. And a lot of the activism that they've been helping, they've been not just pushing activism and rallies against police brutality, they've been helping a lot of women of color here in California, specifically in Chico. There's actually a rally that happens October 1st at the Institution of Women in Chico, California. And it's a hunger strike on demands to stop the rampant abuse and neglect and deaths of so many young women of color. So I'm going to be giving you more information of that later on, but there is a rally October 1st, and there will be a carpool available. There's another hunger strike going on October 17th in Santa Clara County prison. There's going to be a hunger strike on behalf of all the prisoners there to end neglect, rampant abuse, slavery, mistreatment, sleep deprivation. There's a lot of issues that are holding down people, and it needs to stop. So, stay tuned to that. But Something that happened this past week that kind of blew my mind was Sergeant Penny from Dallas, African-American, who served 17 years in law enforcement, who just recently signed a complaint and a lawsuit against Black Lives Matter for a $1.5 billion this is ridiculous. First of all, not only is he like shooting his mouth about Black Lives Matter starting all these riots against police and starting racial wars, but he is also suing for personal damages, which I kind of don't understand. And I think it's something that is going to blow up in his face. The lawsuit is not only against Black Lives Matter, but it's also against members of the new Black Panther Party, against Obama, against Hillary, against a lot of like these like Nation of the Louis Frankers and the Nation of Islam, Reverend Al Sharpton of the National Action Network, Malik Zalu Jabaz of the New Black Panther, George Soros, Attorney General Eric Holder, and these are all the people that the lawsuit's directed towards, and it's, I think it's ridiculous. But, okay, let's go back to the rally on October 1st. If you're interested, there'll be a carpool available. Starting September 29th and 30th, sign up. Just go to the Hunger Strike Ends Solitary Confinement and sign up. It's CIWVigil@gmail.com. And the vigil is on October 1st in Chino, California. Join the families of several young women who recently died in custody for public vigils at the CIW on Saturday, October 1st at 2:30 p.m. 1:30 p.m. meetups nearby. RSVP for carpool directions and prep. The address is for carpool is CIWVigil@gmail.com. I'll say it again. The address for carpooling is CIWVigil@gmail.com. Let's stop all these deaths, our loved ones. A lot of things going on in Chino are everything from sleep deprivation. There are police officers going into the cells, grabbing these young women of color in the middle of the night and making them go through these like stressful, like 48-hour prosecutions for no reason. And a few women have passed away, so that's one of the reasons why this is happening October 1st. That's in Chino Prison. And one reminder also that on October 17th there is another rally and hunger strike going on in Santa Clara. So if you're interested in that, contact the Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity. You can find them on WordPress. They actually have this whole website dedicated to a lot of like the strikes and rallies going on, not just here in California, but like nationally. And if you want the address for that, it's prisonershungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com. And those are the two events that... I'm going to try to make it to the one in Chico. I'm definitely going to the one in Santa Clara, October 17th. And I hope I'll get to see you there. And, you know, make a poster, talk about this, talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter, talk about, you know, slavery in prisons, talk about, you know, anti-racism. Don't just wait for other people to, like, you know, talk about it and do something. You know, make a poster. Put it in your car window. Put it in your house window. Remind people of MLK's dream, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King. remind people of that dream that he gave every single person. You know, he gave every unborn child a second chance to grow up differently. He gave every unborn child a second choice to grow up differently. So do that, and let's end this year with, you know, something positive. And let's support Black Lives Matter. Okay, let me pass you back to Gerald. I think he has a song for us.
Thank you very much, brother. And I'm going to tell you what, I want to thank Rinaldi specifically on that catch with this crazy police officer that doesn't understand the First Amendment. And that just shows you, that's a peek into the false consciousness of law enforcement, that he would think that he has a right to do something like this. Nut City. And by the way, I was looking over the brief, you know, that is the legal papers that he filed to sue. And this is problematic. If they don't throw this out immediately, maybe we do have a problem here, okay? Hold on, I'll be right with you. No. Eric, why don't you share this upcoming events. We're talking about upcoming events now.
All right. So we'd like to announce a free celebration of Oakland life through hip-hop, intergenerational health, and environmental action. This is a tribute to the legacy of the Black Panthers. For more information, this event will take place on October 8th at 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. all day long, at DeFremery Park at 1651 Adeline Street. That's Little Bobby Hutton Park. And for more information on this event, you can go to lifeisliving.org.
Also, there's a beautiful art event going on. You're going to love it. It's called the Oakland Maroons Present. The Point Is 2.0. Art representing the relevance of the Black Panther Party's 10-point program in the 21st century. This will take place October the 7th. Actually, it will. All right, here's where it'll be located. At the Joyce Gordon Gallery, located 406 14th Street in Oakland, downtown Oakland. Oakland, you know, has a wonderful art scene, and a wing of it is actually, the wing of the Black Arts Movement is revolutionary in some ways, in many ways. And they're going to be representing the relevance of the Black Panther Party's 10-point program. On the 7th, Emery Douglas will be there, the artist for the Black Panthers, still alive. Tariqa Lewis will be there, among many others. So it's opening on October the 7th at 6 p.m. They're going to have an artist panel at on the 8th. All right? October 8th from 12 to 2:30 noon. And they'll be making a Black Panther Party coloring book, Youth Day, on the 22nd. Now, the actual exhibit will be shown, and it's called Where Do We Go From Here. It will be shown, there'll be a political panel, that is October the 27th, and the actual exhibit runs from October the 7th to October the 29th.
All right, and getting into political actions, there's a call to action on September 30th. Which is a Friday, the 25th anniversary of the U.S.-backed military coup that overthrew the Lavalas government in Haiti. This is the 7th International Haiti Solidarity Day. A demonstration with music and drums is being planned at 4:30 p.m. at 14th and Broadway. Where else? And a second action in conjunction with also in conjunction with Solidarity with Haiti is a U.S. Hands Off Haiti action on Sunday, October 2nd at 3 p.m. This is a public meeting at the East Side Arts Venue at 2277 International Boulevard.
Okay. Now, this Tuesday, you're going to have a film that you want to see. There's a group called Liberated Lens, and I'm connected with them. We operate out of the Omni. And this Tuesday, September the 20th, we're going to show a documentary called Heist, Who Stole the American Dream and How We Can Get It Back. This documentary explores the worldwide economic collapse of 2008, tracing its origins to a 1971 secret memo entitled Attack on American Free Enterprise System. Okay, this documentary was made in 2012, and I think you're gonna love it. Come on through. We're asking for a $5 donation. No one will be held back from seeing the film due to lack of funds.
All right, and finally, we have a solidarity action with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee at Mosswood Park at 6 p.m. on September 20th. We cannot express enough how important it is to express solidarity with the ongoing striking folks who are incarcerated. They've been facing a lot of oppression. We talked about that early in the show. And we are meeting at Mosswood Park to hear more report backs and to discuss future actions and communications of solidarity and material support that we can provide to folks who are striking. For more information on this, you can go to you can email IWOC-Oakland@IWW.org. You can visit their website at IWOCOakland.wordpress.com. You can call the IWOC office at 510-368-3426. All right.
Well, tell you the truth, I love music. Hey, and there's going to be a Blues in the Park festival and a kids' carnival Sunday, September the 25th, from 1 to 4:30 at the Abraham Brixen Park on South 50th in Richmond, California. Live music, vendors, and they're going to have stuff for the kids, carnivals for the kids with free games and prizes, backpacks filled with school supplies to the first 50 kids. There's going to be a bounce house. You know the kids like that old crazy stuff. Free face painting. You know they love that. I never could understand that, but that's what they like. And that's what they're going to get. And you know what we're going to get? We're going to get us some blues. Oh, yeah, because I'm a blues man. Y'all don't know about that, do you? Yeah. So Blues in the Park Festival, Sunday, September the 25th in Richmond. Don't miss it. We're going to play a little music as a musical break. And after that music, we're going to come back to Brother Eric, who's going to tell us about this situation in North Dakota. Eric, is that it? Hold on to your seat.
This is my autobiography. My little baby, this is my autobiography. Word, this is my autobiography. Cause this no music is a part of my philosophy. Whoa, me say me born in the city, in the ghetto, up the town. Every day me just a hustle, just a move up and down. But can't find a penny, man, me can't find a pound. Thank you, Jaja, for the sweet reggae sound. The pressures of life is holding I down. We got to break the pressures, got to break them down. It's the truth and reality. My little baby, it's a really reality. Good as a student, just to study up history, study up chemistry, and biology, past mathematics, social integrity. Reggae music in a universe, in it, man, it's a dance of philosophy.
nation just keep on spreading the same word to your next door neighbor. Gotta break down the pressures that are holding us back. Until next time, see you all, have a ball, and remember, keep the faith and spread it gently.
Folks, this is Eric here, back with a small report on what's happening in North Dakota with the campaign that is centered around the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe to stop the proposed Dakota Access Pipeline that capital interests are attempting to build through the ancestral home of this tribe. So before I get to what has transpired in the last week at this action, I want to back up a little bit and talk about, for those of you who don't know, how this clash came to be, and what exactly is at stake here. So this is a pipeline that is proposed that will connect crude oil in the Dakotas and in the northwestern United States with refineries all the way down on the Gulf Coast that will cross through several states and several tribal nations. The legal battle around the Dakota Access Pipeline between the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and several indigenous communities begins all the way back on February 17th, 2015, when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers first contacts the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, initiating a permit process. The Tribal Historic Preservation Office responds with certain conditions, like an archaeological investigation, like an environmental impact report, and etc. These very modest requests go fairly unheeded. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is largely unresponsive to these demands. There is a lot of back and forth, the details of which I'll spare you. Fast forward to December. Many other tribes who recognize that this pipeline is going to pass through their ancestral lands as well start to get involved, including the Osage Nation, the Iowa tribe. Their tribal historic preservation organizations and offices attention starts to be raised apart from the Standing Rock Sioux on the part of a number of other tribes. The Corps of Engineers, this coalition of tribes sends a critical letter to several governmental agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Department of the Interior, and the American Council on Historic Preservation, stating, quote, "We have not been consulted in an appropriate manner about the presence of traditional cultural properties, sites, and landscapes vital to our identity and spiritual well-being. So the argument of these councils is that the government has been sort of, the government and the capital interests have been willfully ignorant of the sites that are there upsetting, their historical importance, their cultural importance, and as we'll see, their material importance. So things as it does, the moneyed interests continue their trajectory. In April, the evaluation, a different kind of evaluation process begins, and in July, on July 25th, 2016, very recently, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issues the final fast-track permit. It's called Permit 12, which is needed to continue pipeline construction into the 200-odd sites across four states, across the four states in question. So in July, despite a great deal of legal protest, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issues the permit to the interests involved. At this point, it's called the Energy Transfer Partners. That's who we're talking about. When we talk about the moneyed interests who are trying to get this pipeline to go through, that are interested in, that are not interested in any sort of respect or preservation of these sacred lands.
Who the hell is that? This thing you just mentioned. What, say it again?
The Energy Transfer Partner.
Who's that?
They are the parent company of the Dakota Access LLC. They are the big energy company that is in bed with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in this scenario to enforce, as it appears, by any means necessary, this pipeline going through this indigenous land.
Who behind them? Where did they get the money from? Did they save the money in the piggy bank?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to have to look into that a little more, but they are...
How about Bank of America, for one?
Ah, there it is.
An almost endless list that won't be missed when it's time to liquidate capitalist slavery. No, your banks are behind this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whenever there is a big energy company engaged in an action like this, there are several financial and capital interests involved behind the scenes in ways that will... never or very rarely become public, and like Gerald likes to say, you heard it here. So at this point, this energy transfer partnership, the Dakota Access LLC, they file suit against the Standing Rock Sioux for blocking their construction. Now we're getting into late August, where the protest begins. Now an occupation has built up around these sites, around these lakes and rivers that this pipeline will pose an immediate threat to. The protesters, toward the end of August, on the 22nd, the occupation had increased into the thousands. And the divisional director of Homeland Security, Greg Wills, orders the removal of state-owned water trailers that had been set up to help facilitate this protest action. So we start to see the winds change a little bit. We start to see, it's very typical of state organizations to allow a protest to go on for long enough for folks to lose sight of it, for long enough for them to have gained the political capital that they feel they need to then go and squash it, to then go and do what they want anyway. So we see this start to happen in about August, and about toward the end of August. Now, we get to the beginning of September. The Dakota Access Group comes in on a holiday and plows over a patch of land that the Standing Rock Sioux hold to be a sacred burial ground. The tribe then files suit, quoting Jack Hasselman, "We're days away from getting a resolution on the legal issues, and they come in on a holiday weekend and destroy the site." And according to EcoWatch, the ancient site was discovered only days before its destruction was awaiting review by the State Historic Preservation. So we start to get a sense that that the capital interests in this case are not very interested in even doing what they've legally promised to do. So this is, incidentally, this day, a protest occurs at the site this day in commemoration of the Whitestone Massacre, which occurred in 1863 when the U.S. Army killed more than 300 members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. History repeats itself, doesn't it? Again on this day, this is when, if you've been paying attention to this case at all, you know that the attack dogs came out. On the same day that the Whitestone Massacre is being commemorated, a private army contracted by this energy transfer partnership sets attack dogs on protesters. There's video of this all over the internet, and two of the mercenaries have been identified. At least 30 people were pepper sprayed. Six people, including a child, were bitten by a dog. This all takes place on the 3rd of September. On the 6th, few days later, District Judge James Boasberg, agrees to temporarily halt construction on a portion of the pipeline. Too late to save the Standing Rock burial ground, but enough to stop the bulldozers ahead of a more final ruling expected on September 9th. So we come to a bit of a legal stalemate. We wait for September 9th. On September 9th, what do you think happens? Governor Jack Dalrymple calls for the North Dakota National Guard to increase law enforcement ahead of the imminent decision. And on December 9th, the federal judge rules against all three tribes' injunctions against the pipeline construction. So the judge rules on September 9th that the pipeline's going to go ahead, and interestingly enough, tensions still build. So this happens on September 9th. Folks this week engage in some direct action campaigns to try to stop this pipeline from happening after exhausting all of their apparent legal options. 20 people are arrested on Tuesday, including several independent journalists. And information on their cases is being slow coming out, but many folks are being charged with felonies and including disturbing the peace, or sorry, conspiracy to obstruct governmental activity. Very vague names for charges like this. Joe?
Actually, journalists have also been arrested, including Amy Goodman of Democracy Now.
Yeah, that's so it's important that we get some attention at these cases immediately. Lots of folks. There are stories on. There's a journalist collective called Unicorn Riot that's been good about reporting. Two of their journalists were arrested, but they've reported also that folks are being picked up, you know, driving around a pickup truck or walking around the site and being being snatched and being charged with something like conspiracy to engage in protest activity or some crazy vagary like this. And so what's happening, what has happened this week, the very, very slight glimmer of hope is that President Obama has halted the construction, or at least has ordered a halt to the construction. Only the folks on the ground know whether it's actually halted. But he's ordered a halt to the construction pending a federal investigation. So he's decided he wants to look into this. Folks like the governor of North Dakota, who I mentioned before, are putting lots and lots of pressure on political pressure on the Obama administration to end this to end this injunction, to allow the pipeline to go through as planned. Now, I want to stress something that that's important as we sort of hold out hope, and as we also hopefully look for ways, just as with the prison strike, that we look for ways to express our solidarity and to show our material support. The Standing Rock Sioux recognize that the lakes and rivers that are going to be crossed by this pipeline provide life to millions and millions of people. This pipeline is crossing lakes that are on their ancestral land, but it also is going to be crossing the Missouri River, which stretches thousands of, and thousands of miles and provides water and irrigation to millions of people and to various food sources. Exactly. Everybody's affected by this. And it's our indigenous brothers and sisters and comrades who are standing in the way of this. And so we owe them our thanks and our support. Yes. And if you think that if you're tempted to, you know, buy into these so-called environmental impact reports and what have you that say that, oh, there's no danger in a pipeline going under a river like this, look at what happened in Georgia just last week. In Georgia, the governor instituted a state of emergency after a natural gas pipeline burst and leaked 6,000 barrels of oil, which is about 250,000 gallons, and it compromised the water supply over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of acres. So this could, if something like this happens in the Missouri River, things could get really, really bad. With that.
But, you know, with that, let me just say this before he closes up. Thank you so much, by the way. Look, you know what? See, racism prepares people to say in their sick minds, them Indians raising hell, to hell with them Indians. I ain't got nothing to do with that shit. You do if you need a glass of water. Remember Flint, Michigan.
That's right. That's right. And as the folks will keep telling us, you can't drink oil. So I encourage everybody to look into its hashtag NODAPL on various social media. Look into the Standing Rock Sioux occupation and pipeline action. We're trying to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Victims of democracy, nothing but disguised hypocrisy.
9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is...
Now you got the American Indian people, at least they still have a cultural alliance to their past, and they have known exactly how to go fuck around. Black people at this point don't know. And if you ask black guys about American Indians, I think the consensus would be like, I ain't sure, you know, because they don't know. Hey, you talk about brainwashed, lost people. They ain't giving a fuck about anybody else. They ain't giving a fuck about them. If you don't give a fuck about yourself, you ain't giving a fuck about anybody else.
Again, it's me, Rinaldi, and we just finished listening to Chuck D, one of his songs, Side Projects. He was in NWA. I have some news. So a few days ago was the reunion after 5 years in New York City and downtown Manhattan at Zuccotti Park, Occupy Wall Street. Nothing bad happened. It was a couple hundred people from the original gathering who got there. Some with kids now. Some still fighting inequality. Bunch gathered in costumes, celebrated. An old lady gathered $1 for a pizza for the crowd. And yeah, it's the start of a reunion. Here in Oakland, California, Occupy will be having their 5-year reunion on October 8th at Oscar Grant. There's going to be music, art, and speakers about so many subjects. So check that out. Let's give a quick thanks to like everyone who rallied last weekend at the prison strike. Let me hit you back to Eric.
So something we keep forgetting to mention, we talked about the strike so much at the beginning of the program, is that last week we told you that on the action on Saturday the 10th, we had three comrades arrested, and we knew at that time that they were facing felony charges and being held at a very high bail amount. Those comrades were released on Tuesday, and all of their charges are dropped. Great job on the part of the local organizers who have rallied to support them, on the part of folks bringing attention to their cases, and lots of folks donated to the anti-repression crew's bail fund, and that money will go on to support future arrestees because the state repression never stops. So, what do we have next here?
Next, we're going to talk about the death penalty and elections. So let me just start it off with this, okay? I failed to bring a key piece of paper, which I could have quoted the propositions. But let me just tell you, look out for it. We'll do a little bit now, but we'll do a lot more next week. Because I will certainly have it next week. I think it's Proposition 62 is a proposition that speeds up the death penalty. Okay? Now, how do you speed up the death penalty? Well, I got bad news for you guys. I want you to listen to a commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I'll be right back.
U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Harry A. Blackmun, the court's senior justice who recently announced his retirement, has finally held as a matter of constitutional law that the death penalty, as currently administered, is unconstitutional. Blackmun, in a dissenting opinion in Callens v. Collins, announced his position in a lengthy dissent that severely criticized the court majority for, quote, having virtually conceded that both fairness and rationality cannot be achieved, unquote, in death penalty cases, added, the court has chosen to deregulate the entire enterprise, replacing, it would seem, substantive constitutional requirements with mere aesthetics. In what appeared to be judicial bitterness, Blackmun further announced, quote, from this day forward, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death, unquote. Blackmun's dissent, recounting Supreme Court precedents from its death docket, is a grim telling of judicial restrictions, cases stemming from the 1976 case, Gregg v. Georgia, which reinstated the death penalty, to more recent cases, like Herrera v. Collins, where the court denied a hearing to a man trying to prove innocence. But if Blackmun's denunciation of his benchmates seemed bitter, the response from some on death row seemed equally acerbic. Why now? Asked one. What it means, said another. The 85-year-old jurist's long trek from Gregg v. Georgia, where the death penalty was reinstated, to Callens v. Collins, where he condemns capital punishment process to unconstitutionality in a singular dissent, comes almost a quarter of a century too late for many in the shadow of the death house. Blackmun's critical fifth vote with the Gregg majority made the death penalty possible and formed the foundation for the plethora of cases that he now condemns in Callens, like McCleskey, Herrera, Sawyer, and others, for without Gregg, the others would not be. Further, Blackmun's dissent, though remarkable in passioned discourse, is of negligible legal force and will save not one life, not even defendant Callens. Blackmun, in his death penalty jurisprudence at least, assumes the late Justice Marshall's mantle of the lone dissenter, a Jeremiah preaching out in a dry, searing judicial wilderness where few will hear and none will heed his lamentations. Had he joined Marshall while he lived and Brennan while he adjudicated, a life block might have emerged with enough light and enough strength to fashion a bare majority by attracting two stragglers. But this never occurred, and in his dissent in Collins, Blackmun suggests may never occur, as he wrote, quote, "Perhaps one day this court will develop procedural rules and verbal formulas that actually will provide consistency, fairness, and reliability in a capital sentencing scheme. I am not optimistic that such a day will come. I am more optimistic, though, that this court eventually will conclude that the effort to eliminate arbitrariness while preserving fairness in the infliction of death is so plainly doomed to failure that it and the death penalty must be abandoned altogether. I may not live to see that day, but I have faith that eventually it will arrive," unquote. To which some on death row opine, "No time soon." From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Okay, and that was Mumia commenting on Blackmun's dissent in the Supreme Court. I think most of you are, you know, aware that we've had the death penalty nationally going on for some time now. And the tide is turning. Thanks to Eric, I now have the correct facts. And while I do not advocate elections and electoral processes as the primary means through which the 99% will free itself, there are times when they say, "Can we abuse you some more? You can vote on it." Well, if you can vote on it, vote no. Don't abuse me, okay? Let's be real here now. So this proposition system is unique to California. There are some other states that also have such a proposition system, but California, this is something that, you know, evolved in this state, and I think we should pay attention. Now, to correct my error, Proposition 62 is the proposition to basically ban the death penalty in the state of California. Do I have to tell you that we should vote for that, to ban the death penalty? Because let me tell you what they got planned. There is another proposition. This election, November, called Proposition 66. And in that proposition, it is dedicated to speeding up the death penalty. See, listen, y'all, we got some sick people. Want to try that are running the society. And sometimes the working people, we have to clear our throats and say, "I beg your pardon, shorty, you better step aside, because we ain't for no death, we for life." So how could anybody actually speed up the death penalty? Well, let me tell you, I was invited to a party around Christmas to sign for the represent the Oscar Grant Committee and to sign Christmas cards that we were sending to death row prisoners. So, you know, all right, look, I just say, I don't be knowing about a lot of this stuff. So I just said, "Hey, sure, man, I want to sign these death row prisoners. Come on, I'm down for, you know, show some sympathy for humanity, some empathy for people on death row." So I got to the party, and I'm figuring I'm going to sign 5-10 signatures and get on about my business. I ate my little Christmas food. I got some Christmas candy. Eric, how many signatures was I supposed to sign that night? 704 that night. 704 people, I believe, are currently on death row in this state. Wow. Do I have to say that we should vote yes on Proposition 62. Eric, Hey, you know what? I got me a crew up in here. None of us is as smart as all of us. I'm going to shoot Rinaldi, though, because Rinaldi in love with that damn phone. I'm scared of you, boy. But anyway, listen, the point being, though, here's the point, that I'll say it again. We cannot have class-conscious workers, conscious people of color, cannot have the illusion, because that's what it is, that simply by voting, vote for me and I'll set you free. Yeah, no chance. But with these propositions, there's another one I bet you want to vote for. They want to legalize the marijuana, yeah. Right here in Sweet Cali. Vote yes, God damn it. Take your ass in there. You ain't got to vote for none of the candidates. You ain't got to vote for crooked Hillary or old sick-ass Trump. None of that. But vote for the marijuana, y'all. Come on. Now you know you want to puff. And vote for banning the death penalty. Proposition 62. Now you also have to vote for its antipod, for its nemesis, which is Proposition 66, to speed up the death penalty. How do you speed up the death penalty? I'll tell you how. Today, there are lawyers that specialize and sympathize with people on the death row, and they represent them. If I'm on death row and I sign up for a lawyer, you know how long it takes for me to get a lawyer and what the state is willing to pay? 10 years.
What happened to Carlos Aluna in Texas?
Come on. Come over here, man.
An example of what Gerald just said happened a couple years ago in Texas. There's a prisoner by Carlos Aluna, and he was charged for murder. They sentenced him to death. They ended up killing him, and they never got to prove any DNA or blood evidence on him. So he's one of the examples of the death penalty being pushed way too fast. If that happens here in California, we're going to end up like Texas.
He's so right. So just know, vote, please consider getting your little thing together, get your little ID together, go on down there and vote against death. Vote against 66. How do they want to make it so that the people that are on death row have to take any lawyer that the state assigns to them. Now, I want you to think of what that would look like. Some chump that ain't never did a death penalty case in their life, but's ready to take $1,000 and do nothing for it. They take that money, you go to the death house. That's how it works. So they want to speed up death. We want to stop the death penalty. Abolish the death penalty now. That's what we want to do. And a step towards that is voting for Proposition 62, that is to ban the death penalty in California, a step along the way of banning it in the entire nation, and voting against Proposition 66. To that effect, you know I got a little song lined up for you. Hi.
The life of a nigga in the ghetto.
Hey, yo, yo, see yo, see yo.
All right, everybody. Back in your fucking cells. Come on.
Fuck.
Lockdown. Man.
Fuck.
Man.
You gotta go in your
hey,
fucking
cell.
What, man?
What the fuck are you doing over there? Come on.
Get
in your
fucking
cell.
Shut the fuck up, man. Yo, get the fuck. Yo, don't touch me. Forget it. Yo, get the fuck off me, man. Hey, yo, get the fuck off me, man. Yo, fuck this. Fuck. What?
Faggot ass, yo. They got me hanging on death row. I should have squealed like a bitch. I blew trial and I wish I would have snitched on the punk motherfuckers that really did it. Cause since I've been locked, I never got one visit. They used to say I was the largest, but now when I call, they won't accept my charges. I guess I never had friends. My lawyer took my ends and the bitch got the bends. My last days in the world, I think about how my man is probably fucking my girl. Another bitch ass nigga. I should've turned the gun on him and pulled the trigger. But instead, I'm going crazy. Cause while I'm in jail, he'll be raising my baby. And get arrested that's easy. Cause since I blew trials, he stopped coming up to see me. And now they're gonna fry my ass. Or maybe I'll get locked in a room full of gas. Each day that goes by remains the same, and all I wanna do is cry. I'm always dreaming I'm in hell. And when I wake up, I'm still trapped in a cell. As the clock ticks slow, 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 slow. They got me hanging on death row.
Oh, yeah. So, right now we're going to talk about Rap Brown. Rap Brown was represented Saturday. They called it National Day of Action for Amin Jamil Alamin, formerly known as H. Rap Brown. That was Friday, September 16th. They did a Jummah prayer rally at 1:30 in Little Bobby Hutton Park, also known as Defermery Park. I went. I'm not much for the praying. Try to be respectful of other people's thing. But I observed, and I made an... They had me speak a little bit about Mumia's situation. So, basically, I said, you know, Rap Brown, or as I said, Amin, that means a preacher. He's a preacher. So Amin Jamil, you know, that's like saying Mr. Sanders or Mr. Smith or Mr. Robinson. It's just a nicety, all right? He is not, he's really being held for his beliefs. He was framed up in the night. I mean, it was a really bad frame up. I followed it in the New York Times as it was unfolding. I guess here we have a similar situation as Mumia Abdul-Jamal in that Brother Rap Brown or Brother Jamil has cancer and is being neglected by the prison authorities. So we see this as another case of execution by medical neglect. Now, I want to refer you to his biography, which is, it's called Die, Nigga, Die. That's the name of his. But Rap Brown was a leader of the Black Liberation Movement, the Black Power Movement, the Civil Rights Movement, and through the organization of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, he became a major spokesman. All right, for the progress of the Black Liberation Movement. So what is it then? One, find out more about him. You have a computer? Google it, man. Find out more about his situation. He was definitely framed up. And he has cancer, and he is in prison. Free him now. I'm going to play, what can you do? Well, there's a lot you can do. You can, one, find out more about it and educate your friends. We often run around here like we powerless. Ain't nothing we can do. No, that's not true. You have the power to talk to your family, your friends, your coworkers. You can do that. That helps. You can organize lectures, educational programs at your school, your church, your mosque, your neighborhood, your workplace, or in your organization's meetings. You can write a letter to the editor of the various newspapers in your regions. You can speak out on this, right? Rap Brown, one of the greatest civil rights leaders, is now, well, He's in trouble. Cancer in prison. But I want you to hear his voice before we leave tonight. So just hold on, and here he comes.
You, as students of medicine, will soon inherit one of the most revered titles in Western life. Not general, nor president, but doctor. As those women and men entrusted with that high honor and serious possibility of protecting the public health, there's a threatening obstacle to you all, as well as your patients, the relentless greed of drug companies. As we scan today's headlines, the news flashes about the recent scandal involving the arthritis drug Vioxx. When news stories revealed that the Food and Drug Administration failed to protect the health and indeed lives of thousands of Americans, many of whom suffered heart attacks, strokes, and even death as a result of Vioxx use, the question looms, where was the FDA? Where was the government? It appears that the government, academia, and many physicians were bellying up to the cash window of many of the nation's major pharmaceutical companies and not protecting the health and welfare of the public. The answer lies in the offices of many of the members of Congress on Capitol Hill, where the interests of the wealthy drug companies takes precedence over the lives and health of Americans. The answer also lies in the nation's newspapers and on broadcast cable TV stations, not because of the news reporting, but because of massive direct-to-consumer advertising, known as DTC. You've seen the ads. They are masterpieces of subliminal seduction, a rustic, bucolic scene lit in soft, sun-swept pastels, underscored by sweet violins and even a hip, funky bass line occasionally. It draws you in, and a confident voice seems to confide in you. Having trouble sleeping? Add any other ailment. It doesn't matter. The soft, seductive voice suggests you tell your doctor about Viatrex or some other new, improved superdrug. Studies show that these ads are extremely effective, largely because viewers or readers assume, wrongly as it turns out, that in order for such ads to appear, they had to have been cleared by the FDA or some other similar agency. While the FDA has an ad office called the Division of Drug Marketing, Advertising, and Communication, it has steadily declined its enforcement of DTC guidelines since 1998. In the first half of that year, the FDA issued 84 notice of violation or warning letters. In the first half of 2001, they issued some 38 such letters. Indeed, there are no such regulations directly targeting DTC ads. And what exists are guidelines meant for doctors, not regulations meant to protect the public. Moreover, in the mad rush for more dough, drug companies simply create isomers or chemical cousins of profitable drugs so that they can create a new market, often with negligible or little true health benefits. To top that off, they often fund big university studies to skew research and provide misleading data to support their advertising campaigns. In this repressive era, when drugs are maligned and likened unto implements of the devil himself, prescription drugs, which, as in the case of Vioxx, cause disease, dysfunction, and death, cause little more than a few days of doldrums at the stock market. Thousands of people injured, narcotized into comas, heart attacks, and death for years. And the consequences are little more than an occasional traffic ticket. The high prices attached to prescription drugs are another scandal, one unlikely to be improved by the recent election. While drug corps claim this is due to the costs of research and development, why is twice as much spent on marketing as on R&D? Legalized drugs are a $25 billion per year industry. DTC ads have almost tripled in the 4 years after 1996 to $2.5 billion alone in 2000. In efforts on the horizon under the Bush regime to deepen and broaden the reach of corporate drug kingpins in the area of schools and everyday American life, can anyone question whether this administration is bought and sold by the corporations? Of the nation's top 50 multinationals, 7 are pharmaceuticals. It's time to wage a broad, deep, popular struggle against this drugging of the American people. It's time to rein in those dangerous and misleading DTCs. It's time to take the poisonous profit motive out of the leading farm firms, to treat people because they are people, not because they are wealthy. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. I thank you, members of the National Medical Student Association, again, for your kind invitation. Thanks, Dr. Ricardo Alvarez. It is a rare honor to address you, as I am not only a captive facing death, but an herbalist, a practitioner of what you'd like to call complementary medicine. So health to you and all your patients-to-be. As young doctors in training, you can help transform this scandalous state of affairs. I thank you. On a move, long live John Africa. To health. This is your brother from Death Row, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
There's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming, this one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you can hear it if you try. And it's growing stronger with every day that passes by. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a brand new morning rising clear and sweet and free. There's a new day dawning that belongs to you and me. Yes, a new world's coming. You know the one I'm talking about, the one we've had visions of, and it's coming in peace, coming in joy. Coming in peace, coming in joy. Coming in peace, coming in joy. Coming in love. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, 7 angels having the 7 last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God. And I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that have gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass. That belongs to you.